Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Today, this breakfast isn't just breakfast. It might be the first McDonald's breakfast you're having at McDonald's again. This lunch might be a weekly tradition you hadn't had in weeks. And this dinner might be the first one you bought for not just you in a while. Whatever this order is for you, McDonald's will be here to take it.
Get more of the chicken you love with a delicious McChicken sandwich for $1. And for an extra buck, add a refreshing Dr. Pepper. Dining rooms are starting to reopen in certain communities at participating McDonald's. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
In uncertain times, we could use someone to lean on. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Oklahoma will stand by you with plan options to fit your budget. If you've recently lost your job, had a baby, or moved, you can still get the health care coverage you and your family need. Financial help may be available for those who qualify. Call 855-452-BLUE or visit hereforyouok.com to see if you're eligible to enroll. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Oklahoma, a division of Healthcare Service Corporation, a mutual legal reserve company.
Not to be a backseat driver, but can you say for sure you got the best monthly payment possible on your auto loan? Could it be that you might have gotten a better deal by shopping the loan at a few places and have a lower car payment? Next time, before you go car shopping, visit Communication Federal Credit Union first. Our auto loan experts will find you a perfect loan and get you the lowest monthly payment we can. Communication Federal, your auto loan experts. Restrictions apply. Federally insured by NCUA.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-516-7602 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-516-7602 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-516-7602. That's 1-800-516-7602. Again, 1-800-516-7602.
A new year means it's time for a new home network that can keep up. With Cox Internet, you have the speed and coverage your family needs to stay connected. You'll enjoy Cox's fiber-based hybrid network with options for fast upload and download speeds. And if your household has lots of connected devices, panoramic Wi-Fi may be the perfect fit thanks to its additional control features. Plus, with advanced security on panoramic Wi-Fi, you'll know each connected device is securely protected 24/7. A whole world of connectivity is yours with Cox Internet. Learn more at cox.com.
Run.
Good evening. It must be 9:05. I must be Alan Ray. If you find yourself traversing around the interwebs and you stumble up on Sunday Night with Alan Ray here live on KLRNradio.com, America's podcast network, jump into that chat because it is Sunday night. I am Alan Ray. It's Sunday Night with Alan Ray. Special edition tonight. You know, there's a lot of silliness involved in this show. Some things are serious. Some things are ranty. But I try to do this every year. I try to make a couple of episodes that are really, they pertain to everyday struggles, things that are happening around you. You may or may not know. You may or may not notice. But this is one that's, I don't know, kind of near and dear to me. Because really it has to do a lot to do with mental health. And let's face it, folks, there is a mental health crisis in this nation. And you're going to learn some things today. I think you're going to learn quite a bit. Before we jump into an interview, I have a special guest tonight. Unfortunately, I couldn't get her on here live because just our schedules have kind of conflicted. But a dear friend of mine, we go way, way back into the days of chat rooms where we met, like a sister to me, Heather Kochner. She is a behavioral therapist, and she's been on the show a few times. The last time she was on this show, it actually wasn't this show, it was actually a Hardcore Patriot, was right at the very beginning of the lockdown in 2020. How do I know that? Because April, and yes, I know this is May, April is Autism Awareness Month. Tried to get her on that, just our schedules were just kind of conflicted. But you know what? It's worth even doing it right now. It really is, because it's that important. It's something you need to be aware of. I can imagine, whether you know it or not, just about everybody that you run across, or you yourself, have some type of connections with somebody who is on the autism scale. According to the latest statistics, about 1 in 54 children have been identified with autism spectrum disorder. According to estimates from the CDC, Autism Developmental Disabilities Monitoring Network, ASD is reported to occur in all racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic groups. And it's more than four times more common among boys than girls. Now, about one in six children aged 3 to 17 were diagnosed with a developmental disability, as reported by parents, during a study period from 2009 to 2017. These include autism, attention deficit, hyperactivity disorder, blindness, and cerebral palsy, among others. So this is a very serious subject. And I try not to be too serious on here because, you know, I get sidetracked every once in a while. I get ranty every once in a while. But here we are. And I'd like to start off by thanking everybody that joined us in chat. You know, like I said, if you're out there, you're listening, jump into the chat room, www.klrnradio.com/chat. We have in there already, we have Jeff, who you just heard. It was kind of a surprise lost wonder. I didn't think he was going to do a show tonight, but he snuck in on us. And, I missed the first half of this show, so I'm going to have to catch it up. Jeff is my space nerd hero. So, yeah, we've got to check his shows out. If you don't, you really need to. You got Big Mike. You got Rex. You got the boss man. You got Ricky Rue in there. Rick Robinson, the boss of KLRN Radio. And you got Raptor in there. Guys, welcome. Thank you for showing up. And like I said, most of the time we have a lot of fun in here. Most of the time we kind of do our own thing. But that's one of the staggering statistics that you come across when you're looking at the subject of autism. Now, according to Healthline, autism rates in children reach a new high. The CDC has said more children are being diagnosed with autism than ever before. Now, here's the deal. The rates may reflect growing awareness of autism spectrum disorder and a focus on getting more children into treatment. We know more about autism than we ever have, because we know what to look for now. The treatments are getting better. Things are happening there could be environmental reasons. We do know there are certain things that do and do not actually affect the outcomes of a child having autism or not. But the new data, and this is kind of staggering to look at, the new data published this month from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention revealed that more children are being diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. They also found that Black and Hispanic children are being diagnosed with autism at higher rates than white children. According to the data, 1 in 36 8-year-olds had autism in 2020. That's a jump from 1 in 44 in 2018. Autism continues to be identified more frequently in boys, but the report revealed that the prevalence of autism among girls has increased over 1%. Now, a second CDC report evaluating autism rates in 4-year-olds similarly found that autism is now more common in Black, Hispanic, and Asian and Pacific Islander children and is being diagnosed at younger ages. Compared with white children, autism rates were 1.8 times as high among Hispanic kids, 1.6 times as high among Black kids, and 1.4 times as high among Asian and or Pacific Islanders, and 1.2 times as high among multiracial children. Now, like we said, a lot of this is because we are aware of what to look for now. And it asks the question in this article, why autism rates are rising so quickly, especially among Black and Hispanic kids? Researchers suspect that the rising rates can be attributed in part to the growing awareness and advocacy of autism. We are teaching parents what to look for, the signs, the symptoms, the things that happen. And we're going to get into this more as we go along tonight, because I've got a really, really good interview with Heather, behavioral therapist. Like I said, she's been on the show a few times. We've skipped the last couple of years. Shame on me. Pretty much my fault. But it's always good to have her back. So without further ado, we're going to jump right into this interview. And I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed talking to her. We have Heather on the phone today. Heather, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. My name is Heather. I'm a longtime friend of the host of this show. I am a board certified behavior analyst, and we're usually do probably every couple years, sometimes yearly, a show about autism spectrum disorders or autism in general in response to celebration of April being Autism Month, Acceptance Month. And he'll pick my brain and ask me questions and about what's going on. I am currently live in South Carolina and work in Maryland, Florida, North and South Carolina, providing in-home services and supervision to children with autism spectrum disorder.
All right. So you're back to traveling a lot then?
Yeah, I have clients kind of scattered all over, which is kind of fun because I get to go to different states and also get to see kind of how services are delivered in different states, even though it's a, we have a unifying science, how it's implemented and done in different states is kind of in a learning curve, so to speak.
Okay. Yeah. Cause when we first met online, you were going to, I think, Iowa and different places like that. So you're back to traveling, but in the meantime, you're also kind of doing homesteading and stuff like that. So you're back to being a busy, busy person again. So tell me a little bit about, and I know, unfortunately, we missed April, and April is Autism Awareness Month, which just our schedules didn't align, but that's okay because you're welcome on this show anytime. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to talk about it today. Tell us a little bit about exactly the type of, I guess you would call them clients that you see on the autism spectrum. Who do you deal with mostly?
My clients are range anywhere to being young children or toddlers. My youngest client was 14 months old. And I've also worked with adults and seniors. My oldest client is 75. When they're adults, it's more than working directly with them, especially if they're able to be their own guardians and can make decisions for themselves and their own care. For younger children or individuals who have court-appointed guardianship, then I work more directly with a whole team. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And you know, when you think of autism, and I guess this is the stigma, when you think of autism, you think of children. But you said your oldest client, 75?
Yes.
Now, I mean, and this is kind of, I mean, something that's just popping into my brain listening to that. That's very interesting. You don't really think about adults with having really any type of severe autism, but there's also functional autism, right?
Mm-hmm.
See, I do listen to you when I interview you. I've learned this over the past few years. And
yes, the learning curve is not flat.
You're teaching me. It's slow, and I'm kind of slow myself, but I'm catching on. But these clients range on the spectrum from mild to how severe, how far up the, I guess, spectrum do you work with?
I would say the best way to describe that would be, in our field, we have what's called a scope of competence. So it's what I feel like from my personal clinical training, I feel like that I can handle and what I've been exposed to. So personally for me, it's been to a level before they have to go into like a hospital-based system or setting where they need more intensive care. So it could be like, you know, hurting themselves or others at such a rate that they can't stay within their own home, their group home, and have to be hospitalized. At that level, that's where I may be consulted with if I had been the BCP on the case, but they would be referred out because the level of support and intensive needs that they may have, most of the agencies and the formal training I have would not be enough to continue to support them until they were reduced to where they could be back in the settings that I've had my training in to be able to return back to what would be considered like outpatient or more less restricted spaces. And I don't mean to be so vague, but those behaviors could be range in intensity. And some examples could be like self-injury, like eye gouging, like at a rate of one time every 5 seconds. Like that would be something I would feel uncomfortable addressing in a home setting or in a group home. And they may need to be hospitalized to deal with something like that because it would require some pretty sophisticated skills and a comprehensive team of adults to really address that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And just for clarification, you said your youngest was about 14 months old.
Yes.
And I've probably asked you this question before, but it's worth asking, worth repeating for the sake of the audience. When can you begin to realize an infant may have autism?
That's a great question. What I would say to that is when you start noticing, like, not responding to sounds in the environment, because very early on, infants, you know, probably within the first 6 months of life will, you know, have a startle reflex. You know, if there's certain sounds in their environment, they usually will turn and try to look in that direction, even if they're not really sure who it is or what's going on, and pay attention to what's going on. And if you, you know, put things in front of their, you know, like objects or toys, or, you know, when you're doing like patty cake or back and forth simple games, you get some type of facial expression or recognition. Oftentimes, really early on, when autism may manifest itself in children under the age of 12 months or babies, you'll start seeing things like that earlier on where you'll see kind of like a flat affect, not as responsive. And once you rule out, like, they don't have hearing or vision difficulties, you start kind of having more questions that maybe it's something else and this could be a possibility.
Okay. Now, we've also covered this before, but like I said, it's been a couple of years since you've been on the show. So I don't want to do this. Just a lot of information to go out there because a lot of people who listen to this show have kids, grandkids, especially that, you know, parents, young parents, especially may not really be aware of what they're looking at. I mean, they don't give you an instruction manual right off the bat when you have a kid. So they don't really pay attention to, you know, the child may not be responding correctly or something like that. So what I want to ask is do we have any kind of information that young parents can, you know, a website or something like that, that young parents can go on to and just kind of say, hey, you know, I feel something's not really right, and kind of a checklist that can throw up a flag to say, hey, you really need to take this, you know, child to somebody that knows what to look for. Is there any kind of website or any kind of information that these people can tap into?
Yeah, I was going to say, I was getting ready. It's called the MCHAT. It's MCHAT. It's a screener with a questionnaire that's free. Anybody can log on to it. You can type that into Google and I'll take you to it. That can help you begin to have a conversation with your doctor if you're seeing things that are kind of raising flags that are coming up on this checklist. It's something that you can go onto the website, fill it out, print it out, or take it with you and kind of use it during the doctor visit, or even bring up to your pediatrician or general practitioner that kind of walks you through that conversation. Sometimes even the doctors, if they have a concern, will use that as well and sit down and kind of ask those questions. If they started to notice that, well, you know, wellness visit early on, or you know, in early development, that something's not quite right, to begin to help the parents kind of begin that journey.
Okay. And that's a modified checklist. That's the site, Modified Checklist for Autism in Toddlers, correct? Or is that a different one? Okay. Well, there's the regular MCHAT autism screening right there. I'm kind of looking. There's a couple of them.
That's it right there.
Yep. MCHATscreen.com.
Perfect.
Okay. Yep. That's what we're looking for. All right. So yeah, there's resources out there. So here's let's get into this a little bit. And I've talked to you over and over the years, and I have watched the treatment of autism change. Now, since it's been a couple of years, what has changed significantly in the treatment for autism?
That, again, is a really great question. Some of the things watching it, especially with having coming out of the pandemic, or on, you know, on the other side of things, where since our community starting to open back up, has been the advent and use of using telehealth services has become more socially acceptable as a form of treatment. So families who previously had not been able to access services because they were either too remote, too far out, or there was limited people in their area who were considered credentialed to be able to provide the service through their insurance, now have more equal access to treatment and care than they did previously.
All right. And
that's one big change.
Right. And it's funny because the last time you were on the show, we were just at, it was April of 2020. Everything had just shut down. And one of the big concerns is what happens now with your clients, with your patients, what happens now? And so as bad as a lot of things got, there's some good that has come out of it, right?
Yeah, I would say, I think one of the things I kept hearing parents say during this time is they really got to have an opportunity to see how their child learned when they were at school, because they then became the educator of their children during that time. And it brought up a lot of really good beginning conversations about what their child was learning, how they were learning it. Because I don't think a lot of times parents really knew what the teachers are running into or how their children are being taught. So a lot of parents became teachers of their own children and got a good bird's eye view, and then were able to take some of those strategies and then implement those more effectively in home based on what they learned from the teachers and the supportive service personnel, in addition to the things that us as behavior analysts and our team was giving them. And we saw an interesting appreciation for everybody when it became all on the parents to do a lot of these services. So kind of we've come full circle where, you know, wouldn't say parents are complaining, but they got to wear our hats,
right?
You know, for a change, which was a little bit different. So some of the parents and even the patient's perspective changed. And, you know, when we were able to start coming back out or be there, they were more actively involved in some cases than you may have been before, or, you know, were more, you know, could better understand where we were coming from. And then, but at the same time, we had grew to have more sympathy because since they were with them 24/7 and there was no break, about getting down to bare bones about what we really needed to teach parents and the people providing support either to the parents or the children that were able to, in their bubbles, I think was the right word back then, to support them and how to keep them afloat and really drill down to what did they need to have as tools and support to get through on a day in, day out basis.
And I think a lot of it, and I'm not trying to criticize society as a whole. Oh, who am I kidding? Yes, I am. A lot of it is because they couldn't just pick up the phone and call somebody and say, come over here, things are bad. They could pick up the phone and say, hey, this is what's happening. But the realization that they're the ones that actually had to do the contact, the physical, this is what you got to do. This is how you've got, I can't be there, but you can, and you are. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would say that's a fair description. And then the other part, too, is you started seeing parents really in parent training became more important. Because one of the things that I've experienced is either parents, before the pandemic, it was kind of more like I wouldn't say you had to sell families on it, but it was like not as high as a priority in some cases as having that direct service to their child. But when they saw that there wasn't direct services coming in, there was more of an opportunity to spend the time on that there was more buy-in to that as one of the services that comes in a traditional in-home ABA program or even a center-based ABA program where on their treatment plan, one of the services that we try to get authorized is parent training so that whatever we're teaching or doing parents can be trained on it too and basically become the ones that take this over hopefully and fairly quickly. And because there wasn't any other opportunity or ways that their clients or their children or learners were going to get services, you saw that the utilization of that type of service went up dramatically.
And so as a result, are you using these methods more to help draw the parents in now? I mean, have you continued to use these types of methods just because you know it's successful getting the parents involved?
I would say definitely telehealth has become one of the tools that I like to use, working with parents as well as staff. I still like to, now that I'm able to do in person, kind of like a mix of both, but it's funny because once the therapist and the families kind of get used to the, putting us up kind of like as a bug on the wall, they kind of forget about us. We get to see what the sessions really look like when we're not there versus, like when we show up and it's kind of like, like when the principal comes in the classroom, everybody's like, oh, we're going to, where you might catch some things that you wouldn't normally catch, in one way of providing supports and strategies by being in person versus not being in person. Right. There are some barriers with telehealth. Like if we have some clients who are really into screen time, sometimes that can be a barrier to using that as a service or technology, because that's the other part. Because so many people are on during that time, some of the servers and things got really overloaded and there were a lot of crashing and connectivity issues. So I think it's also built up some of the technology in a lot of areas too, because they realized how important it was to maintain that and expand the capabilities of a lot of those systems so that people weren't feeling as isolated.
So on the other side of that, how about the clients themselves? Did you notice any type of adverse reactions to screen time versus being there in person?
That I would say was more individualized. There were some students or learners who really liked being at home and learning and being with their families. And then there were some that really, especially more, I would say, some of my older clients who were more like community based, like that was a very hard time for them. Some of them did suffer from like depression and some of their behaviors increased and they had just had a really hard time as well as, some of us adults with adjusting to that change. And then now some are scared and have some anxiety issues with going back out, because they, you know, also they're very routine based. So like having so many changes to routine, just starting to get into it, and now we're going back to what they had before the pandemic. They're like, what the heck?
There was some regression there because of the isolation. And, you know, that you could see that not just in, you know, students, people on the spectrum, but society as a whole. I mean, that was kind of a common, being kind of analytical, looking out over the entire United States or the world, actually, once things started opening up. And even to this day, there's still a lot of people that probably were just coming out of their shell or just learning to be functioning adults in society, have just withdrawn, and they just don't want to go back out because they're just afraid. So I could see if somebody had any kind of, I don't know, autism or any kind of condition, you know, mental condition. I know I've got relatives that have anxieties. I mean, they take medications for extreme anxieties, and it just devastated them trying to get back out into society. And they're doing it, but I can't even imagine, you know, not like you said, not all of the patients, but some of them, the ones that regressed, I imagine regressed pretty hard.
And yes, some had, you know, a more difficult time than others with reentry into society, so to speak. And then there were some who really, like, because we were wearing masks, you know, for those of us who had to in different situations, or, you know, I'm not attacking anybody's belief, or believe that you needed to wear it, you know, more frequently than others or at different times of the day, that you didn't get to see facial expression. So that also got to be a little, or development of speech or word sounds, because you couldn't see it. Now, I know there are masks that had the clear insert where you could see the smile and stuff, but it, for people who already have a hard time reading nonverbal cues and body language and stuff, it just added another thing that they had to work through, or with their learning, or people are now going back to kind of see how that plays a part in their learning and processing and understanding of social intelligence and emotional IQ.
And that's really interesting. You know, it is what it is. Whether you agree with what happened the last couple of years or not is totally irrelevant. The thing we have to focus on right now is, what did we learn from mistakes, from things that, you know, we might have done more damage trying to protect us from ourselves, whatever. So, and I hate to be this analytical, but moving forward, we have to look backwards at, you know, what we did to a lot of people that couldn't handle not seeing facial expressions, and not being able to develop. So going forward, has your field adjusted to, I don't know, maybe the realization, the possibility that if we ever have to do this again, how we're going to handle it?
I would say so, because really quickly, since they were finding that this, you know, telehealth was going to be our primary mode of focus, like, they quickly dove in, and a lot of people I respect and former professors of mine were working to develop standards for clinical practice that would make sense and try to make where meet the families where they are at, and gaining kind of like on the spot feedback from families about what were the core things that would really work for them during that time, and were able to start putting into place at least a structure in a with clinical integrity. And now we have data from having been through that, what worked and what didn't. And we learned that obviously telehealth is not for everybody, but we have certain parameters that we can use to gauge whether or not this is an effective form for families and learners. And we also learned, you know, how to triage, in my opinion, what was really necessary versus what was not, and how to support families and novel and individuals in crisis situations. And I think we're a little bit better prepared in case we were to come into something like this again. I still think there's a lot more room for research on this, and I definitely think in some cases in person is better than telehealth, but at the same time, telehealth is better than having no support. And I think it's just going to be continuing, like, looking back and looking at what are your stakeholder markers for improvement for the populations that you serve, and it's more specific to those populations in those areas. Like I know, for example, going back to talking about the internet and technology, I do know that there were a lot more campaigns to make technology more accessible to everyone, and that people could go to their schools and check out laptops and, you know, have direct instruction. And so even if families couldn't afford to buy one or have one, they were able to access technology that they may not have had before because of this situation.
And then you have places like where I am right now, where it's kind of a technology void. And you know, we laugh about it cut up, but there's places like that across the United States, the Appalachians, out west, there's giant chunks of area where there is just not a whole lot of technology, and the technology that's out there is kind of sketchy and shady. So, and this is kind of funny because last night, my wife is pretty sure she witnessed Skylink train from SpaceX going across the sky. That type of evolving technology where we will be able to be anywhere pretty much in the world and tap into something like MChat that I'm looking at right now, the website. I mean, this has got to be something that, you know, the people in your profession are kind of salivating over, because now you can reach places that you normally wouldn't and be able to get people to realize that, hey, you, there might be something wrong. You know, we can help you. Even if you're in some really remote area, we have learned through this pandemic that we can still help you help your children, or, you know, people, adults you live with or whatever. So is there any kind of forum with your colleagues about this type of setup?
Yeah, there's specific researchers who have been going into, I wouldn't say there's, to my knowledge, there's not any like a specific place where we're going in and chatting about it, but there's been a lot of research that's been conducted. And then just amongst ourselves, because we do have our own social groups, so to speak, that we'll chat or share, you know, what's worked, what hasn't. I do think it's the Council for Autism Service Providers, CASPCAS, puts together a lot of quality standards for our industry, and was one of the first front runners during the pandemic to start putting together clinical integrity standards for and income characteristics to look for if to help guide clinicians, since this is all so new to us, to think about these specific character traits of whether that they thought early on would be good indicators if a family was or an individual were good participants to benefit from telehealth services. So, and then the other part we've seen that's been interesting is just the connectivity of being able to collaborate with other professionals around the world. Like I got an interesting inquiry from a young lady I connected through Facebook with who was in Egypt, who was looking for a supervisor for her BCBA. So you're seeing more of that kind of stuff too, where people are connecting globally, where before it was more regional.
So let's go the other way on this. Is there anything that will ever replace a good old-fashioned home visit or a good old-fashioned face-to-face person visit?
I don't think so. I think that'll always be probably most people's go-to, but it's nice to know that you have options. You know, so if that's not realistic, to know that that doesn't exclude you from being able to access services.
And you touched on something earlier about people who don't have access to technology, people who may not own a computer, stuff like that. What kind of help is out there for people who can't afford to have their child or their adult or whatever, can't afford out of their pocket this type of treatment to help their child, help the client that they may be living with? What kind of help is out there for them?
Sure. So one place to always go to, because a lot of Medicaid, state Medicaid will cover ABA services. So first is looking through your health insurance to see, even if you're on state assistance, if ADA is covered in your state. Or you can talk to your caseworker or your provider relations, which is usually the person, if you look on the back of your insurance card, you can call usually it's like a 1-866 or 1-800 number to find out what medical benefits you do have for your children or your adult or the individual that you're helping to determine if they can access the service through their insurance. So that's a great place to start with. Second place is looking at DDA, the Developmental Disabilities Administration in your state. Sometimes there are funding programs called waivers where it doesn't matter what type of income you have. It's more about getting you the services that you need where they'll waive an income requirement because they know that no matter where you are, autism is expensive, that they will try to provide a continuity of care, a range of options for you based on the needs of the individual that you're trying to get services for. The other one is oftentimes there are grants in local communities where, depending on what the specific need is with your individual, it could be environment modifications if you have a concern about an individual leaving your home or eloping, running out the door, getting in unsafe situations where you can get specialized alarms or locks put on the house based on funding. And then part of that is just having a really good either social worker or caseworker. Sometimes those can be people from your school who are on your child's IEP team, or it could be someone from DDA. And it's really good as soon as you get that diagnosis to connect with DDA because they're going to tell you what your child qualifies for, or individual if you end up getting the diagnosis later for services, whether you qualify for like SSI or other things. Because with that usually comes like health insurance and like a complete package of care where you can, kind of see what the budget is for what your individual qualifies for. And then you can look at, based on what you find out you qualify for, which of those services are most valuable to you at that point in time.
Interesting. So, I mean, I don't want to keep you too long. I figured a half hour would be really good for this. What message do you want to pass along to everybody listening? Do you have something that you want to actually just put out? Because I'm asking all the questions, but hey, you're the expert, not me. What one thing do you want people to know in this interview?
Basically, just to be patient, kind, and be human. We're all doing our best. And, whether it's the individual that you're trying to find services for or the person who's coming to your home to provide services or building that relationship between, the family and the provider, because we're all coming out of a pretty crazy time and just kind of getting back into life. And there's going to be an adjustment on both sides. So just being a good human, that's what I would end it with. And treating everybody as you would want to be treated yourself. Regardless if you agree or disagree about religion, politics, and sexual identity. It's not a big deal. We're all just human.
That's right. We are. Everybody's stuck on, like I always say, everybody's stuck on this big blue marble hurtling through space. So we got to kind of have to get along. And it seems like society is going the opposite direction. And it just makes you really not want to jump out into it. And people like us have taken to farms and stuff. and it's funny because
I have to admit, I really like being on my farm. I was going to say getting out and seeing kids and stuff and doing some stuff off of it is cool, but I am definitely excited to get back to my little place. I joke around with my partner about this a lot when I watch some of the stuff on YouTube or reading stuff on Associated Press and BBC, like, if we just would all treat each other the way we want to be treated, I think 99, maybe not quite that high, but like 90% of this stuff would not be an issue. So to me, I think people may think that's oversimplified, but if you treat somebody who has an opposite end of the perspective from you, from whatever socioeconomic that is, religion, politics, whatever, the same way that you want to be treated, most of the time, it doesn't have to be a barrier.
Right. And there are certain people, but you're right. Exactly. And it's funny because, day to day, your everyday existence, I know that I mingle with people that we have just polar opposite views on a lot of things. And guess what?
Mm-hmm.
We still get along. I mean, we sit there, we laugh, we joke, we eat lunch together because we understand that we're different and we don't let it get in the way of actually being humans. Great advice. Heather, I appreciate you so much for being on today. And I know you're a busy person because you've got a lot going on at home and abroad, kind of like me the past few weeks. Thank you so much for being on the show.
No problem. Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. You too. And I'm sure you'll be back. Okay. And anytime, like I said, anytime you have something to say, you're welcome to Sunday Night with Alan Ray. Okay.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Great to connect with you.
All right. Have a great one. And we'll be back right after these messages.
Struck by lightning sounds pretty frightening, but you know the chances are so small. Stuck by a bee sting, nothing but a bee thing. Better chance you're gonna bite at the mall. But it's a 23 or 4 to 1 that you can fall in love by the end of this song. So get up, tell the bookie, put a bet on not a damn thing will go wrong. The odds are that we will probably be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright tonight. The odds are that we will probably be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright for another night.
As a Blue Cross Medicare member, managing your medications from home is simple. With our easy-to-use prescription drug plans, you can get the medicine your doctor prescribes from your local pharmacy or even delivered by mail. For the trusted care you need and want, Blue Cross will be here with more convenient ways of getting it. Like we've been for more than 80 years. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. Confidence comes with every card. To learn more, visit bcbsm.com/senior options.
Hey, Randy, what you doing?
Oh, hey, Dave. I'm just making a list of things that make me feel really, really good.
Wearing Bombas socks.
Trust me, that's number one on my list. Bombas socks feel so good because we use the smartest design and best materials, making them the most comfortable socks ever.
Plus, because socks are the number one most requested clothing item in homeless shelters, we donate a pair for every pair purchased, and that feels pretty good, too.
To shop Bombas or learn more about how your purchase supports those experiencing homelessness, go to bombas.com/comfy and get 20% off your first purchase.
If you prefer real mornings, shouldn't you have a real breakfast? At McDonald's, we get real about breakfast. That's why you can have a savory sausage biscuit with delicious hash browns for only $1.50. It's time to wake up breakfast. Single item at regular price. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Today, this breakfast isn't just breakfast. It might be the first McDonald's breakfast you're having at McDonald's again. This lunch might be a weekly tradition you hadn't had in weeks. And this dinner might be the first one you bought for not just you in a while. Whatever this order is for you, McDonald's will be here to take it.
Get more of the chicken you love with a delicious McChicken sandwich for $1. And for an extra buck, add a refreshing Dr. Pepper. Dining rooms are starting to reopen in certain communities at participating McDonald's. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Not to be a backseat driver, but can you say for sure you got the best monthly payment possible on your auto loan? Could it be that you might have gotten a better deal by shopping the loan at a few places and have a lower car payment? Next time, before you go car shopping, visit Communication Federal Credit Union first. Our auto loan experts will find you a perfect loan and get you the lowest monthly payment we can. Communication Federal, your auto loan experts. Restrictions apply. Federally insured by NCUA.
The odds are that we will probably be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright tonight. The odds are that we will probably be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright tonight. The odds are that we will probably be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright tonight.
Odds are that we are going to be all right. night. At least for another night. Can't promise anything beyond that. Welcome back. It is Alan Ray. Thank you so much for hanging in with me. Thank you so much for Heather for coming on my show yet again with a great interview. Always informative, always bringing up something that I've never even thought about. It's kind of, like I said, it's been a unique experience over the years talking to her on this and other shows, especially now that we are a couple of years past the lockdown, a couple of years past the pandemic lockdown, which, as we know, we told you, well, I told you from the very beginning that this was not going to fare well with children, with people suffering mental health issues, people like that. It was not going to go well for those. And lo and behold, as we go farther along into this, now even the government muckety mucks have to admit this was bad. What they did hurt more people than it helped. But I digress. I'm not going to get into the politics tonight. I want to stick with just our exact autism awareness special, that exact line of thinking. Just so you know, no cure exists for autism spectrum disorder. And there is no one-size-fits-all treatment. Just like everybody's brain is different. No two brains are alike. No two thought processes, no two developments are identical. Even with identical twins, there is a little bit of variance. And if you've had enough psychology to screw you up like I've had, you know that it's the experience of every single individual is like a thumbprint. It's like a fingerprint. It's totally different from individual to individual. So it's insane to think that there is a one-size-fits-all treatment. However, the treatment of autism is being refined by the day. New developmental processes, new ways to help these kids or even these adults become functioning members of society, and in some cases of severe autism, actually becoming at least communicative. So they can tell you what's wrong. So they can indicate what they need, what they desire to help them live better lives. The goal of treatment is to maximize a child's ability to function by reducing autism spectrum disorder symptoms and supporting development and learning. And a lot of this development, a lot of this learning falls on the shoulders of caretakers, of parents. And if you are dealing with a child that you suspect is developing the signs of autism, get them checked. There's no shame in it. It happens. We know that autism could be the result of several things: DNA, environmental problems. Unfortunately, some of the toxins that have been released over the years that we didn't know about. We know. The important thing is, if you suspect that somebody under your household or somebody close to you is dealing with a child with autism, encourage them to get checked. Go into that MChat. It's a very, very easy website to remember. It's just MChat, M-C-H-A-T. You type that into the Google machine, it's going to come back with mchatscreen.com. And it will go right down a checklist that tells you what to look for, tells you what you're looking at. Is your child not responding to certain stimuli? Are they not doing certain things that you believe they should be doing at that age? Get them in. Get them checked out. There's no shame in it. And one of the big reasons, in spite of what a lot of people might think, it's easy to get caught up in the conspiracy theories and everything else. That all remains to be seen. I'm not going to discount any of them. I'm just going to say a lot of what you're seeing with the increase of autism is that we now know that there's several levels of it. And we know what to look for and how to diagnose it. And by we, I mean the, you know, people who do behavioral therapists, psychologists, who deal with these people. They know what they're looking for now. So it's easier to actually diagnose and help somebody through autism. A lot of it's very mild. There's a lot of functioning autistics out there. Some of them are running companies. I mean, it's just that it's that simple. And they're severe. I mean, that's why they call it a spectrum, because it goes from very light to very, very extreme. But there is help for all of them. And I want you to remember that going into this week. Thank you so much for tuning in to this Autism Awareness Special. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do a show next week. I'm going to be across state at for Mother's Day. My wife and my daughter and son-in-law and some others maybe possibly are all going to be going to the Holland Tulip Festival in Holland, Michigan next week. It's the last weekend of it. And it's really a beautiful area, beautiful time. Hopefully the weather's going to hold out. My gosh, it's been a gorgeous weekend. Even though they were predicting rain and storms and all this stuff, it's just been a beautiful weekend, and I've really enjoyed it. Hurt myself a little bit running chainsaws and doing all this stuff. But hey, you know, that's just life. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for being here for me. If I'm not here next week, I will be back the week after. And I'm planning a different kind of show, because I have people here on KLR and radio, people that talk to me on a daily basis. They want to know about getting their technician license for ham radio, some of the basics. And this is going to be a total flat out nerd fest, but I'm putting together a show that's going to point you in the right direction and get you going and get you to know what you need to know to get into ham radio and to buy that cheap Baofeng radio and actually know how to use it. I'm Alan Ray. Keep it locked here on KLRNradio.com all week long. We got a FUBAR tomorrow, I believe. Already you're in chat, right? Yep. Says see everyone tomorrow on FUBAR. So we got a FUBAR tomorrow. Hopefully they have a special guest. I really hope they have that special guest tomorrow, but I doubt they're going to, because let's face it, I think that guy doesn't have the cojones to go on the show. But keep it locked on in KLRN Radio all week long. There's going to be something in there that's going to make you happy, make you think, make you get mad, whatever, because we are America's Podcast Network. Keep it locked on here. And until I meet again with you, like I said, maybe week after next, I got a feeling it's going to be, folks, because I got a feeling it's going to be a busy weekend next week. Until we talk again, God bless. Just keep it pointed towards the sun. We'll be back soon.
Striking all over the world. There's lightning striking all over the world.